All right, back on the Air Turks, Cenk Uygur, experiment with you. Anna, I am back from the United Kingdom.
We can see that.
Yes, indeed. Yeah. There were some controversies there.
Okay.
And I had a debate with the lawyer that won Citizens United.
Oh.
Ooh, drums. And also on the other side, Floyd Abrams, arguably the top constitutional or First Amendment lawyer in the country. So did I win or did I lose? There was an actual vote post game. Sorry. TYTnetwork.com/join and my opinions on the British as well.
I wanted to share some commentary about Elizabeth Warren coming in studio and doing an interview with you. Just some thoughts on that.
Controversy indeed. TYTnetwork.com/join to become a Young Turks member and get all the post games. Okay, Ryan Zephyr writes in, the protesters aren't doing anything but will hurt your bottom line. So what do? You hire people to paint them as violent. Well, that's exactly what happened. Michael Ritchie says, it is constitutionally protected to protest. No such right for mercenaries to blow off the arm of a peaceful female protester. That happened. So thank you for reminding the audience of that, Michael. And then finally, Rita Ann says, government interests have merged with private interests for the protection of corporate profits and campaign contributions. Now, we built these robots called corporations, and they are running amok. So if you saw those science fiction movies where the robots take over, we're living in one of them. Sonya Anahala, okay? So that's what's happening now. They're just called corporations, especially public ones. All right, Anna's got more stories for us.
All right. The Minnesota police officer who shot and killed Philando Castile has been charged and will go through trial. He's been charged with second-degree murder along with two other lesser charges. Now, the cop who has been charged is Geronimo Yanez. And for those of you who might have forgotten the Castile situation, he was killed July 6th of last year during a traffic stop in St. Paul, in the St. Paul suburb of Falcon Heights. The shooting's gruesome aftermath was streamed on Facebook by Castile's girlfriend, who was in the car along with her young daughter. Now, we're gonna bring back the video for you guys just to either refresh your memory or let you know exactly what went down for those of you who might have missed the story when it was making headlines last year. But keep in mind that Philando Castile, the black passenger in the car, was a licensed gun owner. In fact, he had a permit to carry. And when the cop had stopped them, he told the police officer, I have a weapon, giving him a warning. And it didn't matter because Yanez decided to shoot him anyway.
Yeah, and he said, look, I'm licensed to carry it.
Right.
I'm telling you so that you don't perceive it as a threat, basically. That's why he was giving him the warning. And at that point, there's apparently new video that'll come out in trial.
Right.
And you can see that Yanez keeps yelling like, don't pull it out. And he's saying, I'm not pulling it out. And then next thing you know, he shot him 7 times. So
keep in mind that the couple's child was in the back seat as this incident occurred. We're about to show you the video. It's difficult to watch. It is graphic. But for those of you who want to see it, here it is.
Stay with me. We got pulled over for a busted tail light in the back. And the police just, he's covered. They killed my boyfriend. He's licensed to carry. He was trying to get out his ID and his wallet out his pocket. And he let the officer know that he had a firearm and he was reaching for his wallet. And the officer just shot him in his arm. We're waiting for a back. I will, sir. No worries. I will.
Fuck.
He just shot his arm off. We got pulled over on Larpiner.
I told him not to reach for it. I told him to get his hand off
it. You told him to get his ID, sir, and his driver's license. Oh my God, please don't tell me he's dead. Please don't tell me my boyfriend just went like that.
Keep your hands where they are, please.
Yes, I will, sir. I'll keep my hands where they are. Please don't tell me this, Lord. Please, Jesus, don't tell me that he's gone. Please don't tell me that he's gone. Please, officer, don't tell me that you just did this to him. You shot 4 bullets into him, sir. He was just getting his license and registration, sir.
She gets more upset, understandably so, as it goes along.
Yeah.
When it dawns on her that, no, he's really gonna die. And he did. And he had told him to get his, the cop had told him to get his wallet. And so he's trying to get his wallet, and the cop keeps yelling at him.
To get his ID specifically.
Yeah, he says, don't pull it out. And the last words of Castile after he gets shot, which is apparently in the new video that's gonna come out in trial, because that's from the officer's dash cam.
Right.
Is gonna show you what happened before the shooting and during the shooting. Castile's last words were, I wasn't reaching for it. Because damned if you do, damned if you don't. If you don't get your ID, you're in trouble. If you go to get your ID, you get shot. If you don't tell me you have a licensed weapon, you're in a world of trouble and you can get shot. If you do tell me you have a licensed weapon, you get shot anyway.
Yeah.
And Castile had been pulled over dozens of times before, not for legitimate things. Nope, you know, hey, tail light, this, that, the other thing, constantly harassed. He was a worker at a local school at the cafeteria for 32, he's 32 years old, been there for years and years and years. You can't do anything right. No matter what you do, you get shot.
Even if you own a firearm in a legal way, by the way, I don't know, I could be wrong, but I don't remember the NRA coming out and speaking against what happened to Philando Castile, who legally had a weapon and warned the cop ahead of time.
If the NRA was a legit organization who actually cared about gun owners, they would have lost it over Philando Castile. They would have made him their poster boy for big government. With their jackbooted thugs, stuff that they've said in right-wing circles before, and how it's government overreach, and look at what they did to a good American who is licensed to own a gun, and warned the cop exactly as he was supposed to do by law. NRA, where are you? I'm not raising much of a stink over this, interesting.
So let's talk a little bit about the trial and how things are expected to play out, because I think that is important. As I mentioned earlier, Yanez, who is Latino, is charged with second degree manslaughter, punishable by up to 10 years in prison. He's also charged with two lesser counts of endangering safety by firing his gun near Castile's girlfriend, Diamond Reynolds, and her daughter. Now, in order for prosecutors to prove successful in this case, they have to show he acted with culpable negligence, that he was reckless and acted unreasonably for the situation. The defense is planning on bringing up Philando Castile's blood tests and how they indicated that he had traces of marijuana. And so they're gonna try to make it seem as though he was stoned during this encounter, which is why the cop's life was in danger. Also, keep in mind, just to look at the statistics overall and look at the broader picture, since the beginning of 2005, 81 officers nationwide have been charged with murder or manslaughter. Only 81 since 2005. A little more than a third were convicted, 15 by jury and 14 by guilty plea. So it is very rare for a cop to actually be charged, and B, once he is charged, to be convicted for the charges against him. And that's partially because the jury is usually uncomfortable finding a cop guilty when he or she is thought of someone who has to make a split second decision.
Yeah, almost always they use the defense that they had no choice but to do what they did. Now, you saw the tape there, it appeared that he had plenty of choice. There was a thousand things he could have done. He could have said, get out of the car. He could have not panicked. He could have not shot into that car. Like, if a guy says, hey, I have a licensed weapon, he's trying to give you a heads up. Let's not have a miscommunication here. That should cue you that you have other choices, that there's many other choices that you could have. But oftentimes they go free because they say, well, how can you question a split second decision there? Yeah, I can question it. And I think the charge here is exactly right. It's not a homicide. He didn't mean to go kill Philando Castile that day. He doesn't know Philando Castile.
Right.
He had no relationship to Philando Castile. Yes, it was a horrific miscommunication. But you can't miscommunicate and kill someone like that. That's second degree manslaughter. It was exactly reckless and acting unreasonably in that situation.
I just feel like, look, I mean, obviously, you look at a situation like that and you can talk about what you would have done. And you don't know how you would react personally in a situation like that. But I feel like if I were a cop and I genuinely felt threatened because this guy legally has a gun, I would ask him, where is the gun? And I would take the gun. right? I would take the gun away from him if I genuinely think he serves a threat. I wouldn't say, hey, get me your ID and then proceed to shoot him because I think he might be reaching for his gun. That just doesn't make any sense. But it's just such a devastating story. And we've done so many of these stories in the past. And for some reason, that one gets to me the most because of the way his girlfriend is reacting to it, because she's forced to remain calm because she knows that any sudden movement could threaten her own life.
And her daughters.
And in the meantime, I mean, her boyfriend's dying next to her. I mean, how can you not put yourself in her shoes? Like, I think about how I would feel if my husband was shot next to me, right?
And if you went to even comfort him, it could be perceived as reaching for the weapon.
I couldn't handle a situation like that.
The thing that drives me crazy about this case is damned if you do, damned if you don't. You want to talk about having no choices? Philando Castile had no choice. He kept getting pulled over for incredibly minor infractions, and oftentimes they wouldn't even charge him because they just pulled him over because he was black. And so I know that there's some people who are denialists out there. No. There's no racial discrimination at all in the country. They just happen to coincidentally pull him over dozens of times and not give him any penalty at all because they really had absolutely nothing on him. But if you keep pulling over black people over and over and over again when they didn't do anything wrong, he's just a cafeteria worker, he's been everybody in the community who vouches for him. Well, if you keep pulling him over, at some point you're gonna have a situation like this. So we have to have just some sort of common decency to one another, and this is not how you do it. I mean, my God, if you were worried that about anybody who had a gun and the cops can just shoot him and kill him on the spot, you'd kill a giant percentage of the country.
Yeah.
I mean, there's 250 million guns in the country, but obviously there are different standards for different folks. And if you're, you know, if you're in a different situation and you've got a weapon, well, then you know you're a good, upstanding American citizen, exercising your Second Amendment rights. If you're Philando Castile, you're dead in your own car. And last thing is, if you watch the rest of that video, they let him bleed out. He keeps pointing the weapon at him. They don't get him help for so long. If he had just rushed at that point to go get help, maybe they could have saved his life. But they let him bleed out. That's what we're talking about. There's no respect for human life anymore. So is that secondary manslaughter? Well, the court and the jury will have to decide. But to the naked eye, that's what it certainly appears to be.
All right, we have to take a break. When we come back, if you think mandatory minimums are bad now, wait till you hear what Republicans want to do. Come right back.
All right, back on the Young Turks, Cenk and Anna with you. CJ writes in using hashtag TYT live on Twitter. Castile's girlfriend is an incredible hero for filming with such composure. That cop deserves the max penalty. On a lighter note, Kim Horcher of Nerd Alert fame tweeted in. And she said, I went home, sat on the couch, closed my eyes briefly, and heard Cenk Uygur's voice saying, what is this? Turns out a neighbor is watching.
Wow.
Sometimes I'll be doing interviews with a reporter at a cafe in New York or something, and a person next to us will be watching.
That's so crazy.
Once I was filming live, and I looked over my shoulder as somebody was watching me doing it live, and then they looked at me and I looked at them. It's amazing stuff. Anyway, members of the day are Casey Wells and Tom Carter. TYTnetwork.com/join to become a member. And today we've got a great post game for you guys, including my debate at Oxford and Anna's takeaway on Elizabeth Warren's visit to the studio earlier today. And then I forgot to give you guys one thing. In the Cory Booker story, I also wanted to ask you guys a poll. Is Cory Booker a progressive? Now, to some of you, that might be super obvious. In Washington, I think it would probably be obvious the other way. But I'm curious, that's why we ask. So tytnetwork.com/Booker. And I want to see, do you guys think that he is a real progressive? Or just a progressive, don't worry about real. Is Cory Booker progressive? Again, Washington, that would be a landslide. Of course he is. With our audience, I don't know. It might be a landslide in another direction, but I'm curious what you guys think. Okay, all right, what's next?
All right. Draft legislation obtained by The Hill indicates that some Republicans in Congress are planning on passing legislation that would increase mandatory minimums for certain crimes. Now, this draft legislation was authored by Senator John Cornyn, which is a little unusual considering Cornyn wanted to do away with some mandatory minimums, and Representative Michael McCaul. Now, the law effectively creates a three-strike rule. Immigrants with prior aggravated felony convictions or two prior convictions for illegal reentry would get a mandatory five-year sentence. So I want to stop there for a second. That's just one part of this draft legislation. And I do want to be clear, the proposal is not done yet. So things might change before it gets proposed. But as of now, this is what the proposal calls for. Why are we going to put immigrants in prison for 5 years, which American taxpayers have to pay for, if we're so concerned with immigrants using up our so-called resources? I just find that a little strange. Could it be because we want to funnel more money into private prisons? Of course. Now, the legislation also incorporates Cornyn's Back the Blue Act, which creates a 10-year minimum for assault if the judge or law enforcement officer is seriously injured, a 20-year mandatory minimum if a deadly or dangerous weapon was used in the assault. Now, it's unclear who determines what the dangerous weapon is, but anything can be considered a dangerous weapon, right? A vase can be considered a dangerous weapon. Also, a 10-year minimum for fleeing after killing, attempting to kill, or conspiring to kill a judge or law enforcement officer. This also includes firefighters.
So, look, it's not like you either get this or you get nothing. There are already laws in place. Of course you can't kill cops. Of course you can't kill judges. And you'll have an enormous sentence if you do, including in a lot of places, the death penalty. So this is on top of that. This is just to make sure that you get a mandatory minimum. Now, the reason you need those is if it's a borderline case, and they actually would not have gotten that many years because they considered his fist a deadly weapon or his car when he did a fender bender with the cops a deadly weapon. Now, the judge might use their discretion and go, he wasn't trying to kill the cop. Okay, but he shouldn't have run away from, whatever it is, 5 years, right? Now they go, no, mandatory minimum of 20 years because we become a police state and we gotta lock up all of our citizens for as long as possible and take any discretion away from judges or juries. Well, then what the hell is the point of the judge or jury? We already have draconian laws on the books. We already can throw the books at people if they actually hurt cops or judges in any way, shape or form. This is, like, there's almost no other purpose to this than to do injustice, to say give them more than what a judge or jury would have normally given them. Because we need to fill up those jail cells. That's taxpayers right. Need to pay more money. Private prisons need to make more profits, which then they funnel over to Republican politicians in the form of legal bribes. Some Democratic politicians too, but Republicans take more legalized bribes from private prisons in particular.
So keep in mind that this is not a partisan issue, right? Both Democrats and Republicans in Congress understand that, you know, these harsh penalties and these mandatory minimums are draining our resources, do not actually deter people from crimes, and actually leads to a higher recidivism rate, which means more people end up back in prison because it creates this vicious cycle where they're not rehabilitated. It's all punitive. Now, Senator Mike Lee, a Republican from Utah, against these mandatory minimums. Also, Charles and David Koch, the Koch brothers, against these mandatory minimums. So this is not us as progressives trying to make a point about, oh, we need to be easy on criminals. No, it makes sense to be tough on criminals in cases of murder and rape and things like that. But right now, according to the ACLU, there are more than 3,000 people who have life sentences without the possibility of parole because of nonviolent offenses. Why do you think that is? If they don't actually pose a threat to society, why are they in prison for the rest of their lives without the possibility of parole? Well, it's because private prisons lobby very aggressively for these strict penalties, right? For these strict sentences. And so this doesn't have anything to do with justice. This has nothing to do with keeping us safe. It has everything to do with the corporate world and making sure that GEO Group and Corrections Corporation of America, which rebranded itself as something else, make as much money as possible by imprisoning as many people as possible.
So let me clarify that Anna's right, that it was not a partisan issue because Obama and yet conservatives like Mike Lee, the Koch brothers, and by the way, John Cornyn, the guy who now proposes this, were on the side of criminal justice reform. But after Trump got elected, they made it partisan. So one, Trump is Jeff Sessions, now the new attorney general, have to show they're tough on crime. They're tough in a stupid way that cost us a lot of taxpayer money that even conservatives didn't want in the past. And plus, they took more money from private prisons, so they got to do them a favor. One of the first things that they reversed was Obama's decision not to use private prisons at a federal level. They're like, no way, those are our donors. Now they go to Cornyn and go, hey, remember, now we're making this everything partisan, and remember, you're serving the donors. And Cornyn just flips and goes, oh, okay, yeah, doing the right thing, being nonpartisan, who cares, you're right. I don't know what I was thinking. No, let's go back to being partisan hacks and keep taking that money and imprisoning American citizens for longer and longer.
So the private prison industry lobbied and gave hefty donations to members of Trump's administration and Trump's supporters. So Mike Pence alone got $17,000 in 2016 alone from Geo Group, which is only one of the private prison companies. But keep in mind that in the last 15 years, Geo Group has donated more than $12 million to political campaigns and politicians. So that's the reason why we have injustice in America. It's not about keeping you safe. It's again about imprisoning as many people as possible for the longest period imaginable, just so these companies can make money. That's all it's about, and it's disgusting. All right, moving on to other news, something completely different. The owner of the Giants just confirmed something that a lot of people suspected but weren't completely sure about. Now, when it comes to Colin Kaepernick, of course, he hasn't been signed yet. And some have suspected that the reason why is because he made some pretty strong political statements by refusing to stand for the national anthem. And of course, he did so to raise awareness about Black Lives Matter. Now, every team has said, no, we didn't sign him because he's not that great of a player. We had to go in a different direction. But here's what John Mara, owner of the Giants, had to say. All my years being in the league, I never received more emotional mail from people than I did about that issue. If any of your players ever do that, we are never coming to another Giants game. It wasn't one or two letters, it was a lot. It's an emotional issue for a lot of people, more so than any other issue I've run into. So essentially, he's saying, NFL fans don't really like what Kaepernick did, and so maybe that played a little bit of a role in our decision to not sign him.
Okay, so one, I'm glad he's finally admitted it, and that it is a political decision that the Giants are making and most of the owners are making. And the owners previously had talked to reporters before Kaepernick even went on the market back during the season last year when he was with the 49ers and said, we're never ever gonna sign that guy, and it doesn't have anything to do with football. We just don't like him. So when Mara talks about how NFL fans don't like him, no, some NFL fans are upset with him. Others love what he did. But you're deciding to go with the people who are upset. And should Colin Kaepernick be in the NFL? Look, I've talked about this a lot. He's as a football fan, Kaepernick was a little disappointing because he had enormous potential and then some mediocre results near the end. Does that mean that he shouldn't be on a team? Are you kidding me? There's at least 8 teams where he would be the better starting quarterback. But when you go into the bench and you go into your second string and third string quarterback, you're telling me that he's not better than any of the second string quarterbacks in the NFL or third string. If you're a football fan, you can't possibly make that claim.
Right.
So you know that that's not true. You know you take him as your second or third quarterback in a second, and because he has huge upside potential. And so if you don't say that, you don't know football at all.
He reminds me of the modern day Dixie Chicks, which by the way, the whole Dixie Chicks debacle didn't happen that long ago. It was when they protested Bush's decision to do a preemptive war in Iraq, right? And people lost it. And so if you are in the entertainment or sports industry and you decide to get political about an issue that you're passionate about, you're immediately cast off as toxic, right? And dangerous and controversial. But I do find it's super interesting that the Giants seem to have a problem signing someone like Kaepernick, who did not do anything illegal, did not do anything violent, okay? But they had no problem with Josh Brown. I mean, they let him go last year, but homeboy beat his wife, right? on several occasions, or at least was abusive to his wife and admitted so in a letter where he wrote, "I have physically, verbally, and emotionally abused my wife, Molly." Right? But that's okay. Suspending him for one game, that's enough. But when Kaepernick does something political, oh, well, he's toxic, can't sign him.
Look, I love America. We have the flag in the background oftentimes on the show. But part of America is allowing dissent. If you don't understand that, then you don't actually love America. You want to live in a country that doesn't allow dissent. And that's incredibly un-American. So, of course, somebody should sign Kaepernick, and what they're doing to him is a total injustice, and this is an admission of that. All right, guys, we'll see you tomorrow. All right, we're back. I pretty much bungled the ending of that last hour.
I was like, no, we're gonna come back. But
I know, I was like, oh, we'll see you tomorrow. Actually, we're gonna see you in like a minute. You guys know we're on Sirius Satellite Radio now, right? So we gotta end that show by 5 o'clock Pacific, and that's why I bungled it today. All right, anyways. Thana at hashtag resist says, I love what Kaepernick did. I'm a Giants fan and the owner can suck it. Okay. Well put, eloquent Thana. We appreciate it. And I have a new plan for Kaepernick. I can't unveil it yet. We'll probably unveil it on TYT Sports.
Is he going to be a correspondent for TYT Sports?
Interesting. Who did I run into? Oh, I ran into Kurt Warner the other day. I didn't talk about that in the post. We'll have to do that in a different post game. But anyways, no. But it is a plan that might get Kaepernick back in the NFL.
Damn.
Okay, so that's for another day because we got to plan it out. All right, what's up, Ann?
All right, we have some drama in Texas. I wanted to make sure we did this story, so let's do it. A scuffle ensued on the House floor in Austin, Texas, after House members were debating SB 4. Now, this is legislation that was signed into law by Governor Greg Abbott that essentially bans sanctuary cities in the state of Texas. Now, as lawmakers got together, there was a protest outside with constituents showing that they were extremely upset that this had now become law. It does ban sanctuary cities, allows police to question anyone they detain about their immigration status and compels local officials to comply with federal requests to detain individuals in state and local law enforcement facilities. Now, as this protest was happening, a lawmaker by the name of Representative Matt Rinaldi decided to go up to his fellow Democrats and essentially threaten the protesters. Here's what Representative Philip Cortez said. We were just on the floor talking about SB 4 protests, and State Representative Matt Rinaldi came up to us and made it a point to say, quote, I called ICE on all of them, and this is completely unacceptable. We will not be intimidated. We will not be disrespected.
So Rinaldi sees some Latino protesters and thinks, yeah, they must be illegals.
By the way, I don't even believe for a second that they were all Latino protesters, right? He just saw protesters who were speaking out against SB 4, and he just assumed that they're all undocumented immigrants.
Yeah, that's, by the way, so preposterous. You think undocumented immigrants show up to a government building with signs? Okay, is it possible that one person there was? I don't know, right? But certainly Rinaldi doesn't know. How the hell would you know by just looking at him? He sees Latinos and goes, oh yeah, the illegals. And then turns around and goes, well, what racism? I don't know, I see brown people and I call the government and tell them to remove them from my country, having no idea if they have papers, don't have papers.
Yeah.
I don't know, I'm calling it like I see it. Yeah, I know, that's the problem.
So Representative Ramon Romero Jr. Says he saw the crowd and he saw illegals. He saw people that, whether he likes to accept it or not, in his heart, he has hate for those people and he wants to see them gone. He wants to see them gone so much to the point that he called ICE. Now things got super heated on the House floor to the point where, cue the video, all of a sudden things started to get, it at least appears things started to get a little physical. No one's throwing punches or anything, but everyone gets together and starts arguing. Apparently, there were some threats as well. Representative Justin Rodriguez says there was a threat made from Representative Rinaldi to put a bullet in one of my colleagues' heads. That kind of threatening language, he needs to be called out and held accountable for. Okay, so Rinaldi responded back to that and said, no, someone threatened my life. It's impossible to tell who's telling the truth and who's lying, but this did lead to some constituents calling Democratic lawmakers in Texas and essentially threatening them or saying really hideous things about immigrants. So let's go to the video from Representative Cesar Blanco. He shared this on Twitter. It was one of the constituents calling and sharing his thoughts on immigrants.
Sir.
Yes, I stand with Matt Rinaldi and fuck the illegal alien sticks.
Okay, thank you very much, sir.
White power.
Okay.
Yeah, they seem quite thoughtful.
Yeah, don't thank him. That was such a Democratic thing to do, by the way.
Like, oh, yeah, yeah, you said something horrible and heinous. Thank you very much
thank
for calling.
Thank you, sir.
Yeah, okay, no.
Go fuck yourself, how about that?
That would have been another way to go. I know that's not the Democratic way. Okay. So look, Rinaldi says, oh, they threatened me first. That's why, you know, according to the other legislators, threatened to put a bullet in another legislator's head. Problematic, right? Mm-hmm. Rinaldi says, I mean, I thought maybe somebody in the crowd was saying that they were illegal. Why would they say that? Right? Like, you can choose to believe anyone you want. And if you're a right winger, you're gonna believe Rinaldi. But it's a weird thing for one of the protesters to randomly be like, I'm illegal.
No, I mean, look, I think that that's actually a possibility, because in some protests and demonstrations, people who are not documented, undocumented immigrants, will try to, you know, be courageous and come out there and say, look, I'm undocumented, do I look like a threat to you? You know, they're trying to make a point.
And Rinaldi
so that's a possibility.
Yeah, Rinaldi's like, of course you do, you're brown. So he called ICE on all of them. But look, the reason I bring that up is, so if you want to hang on to a fig leaf pretense for that, that's fine. But what Rinaldi's actually trying to do is intimidate people. So if you show up and you're Latino and you're going to protest me, I'm going to call ICE on you. And I don't care if you are or not undocumented. I have no way of proving or unproving that, right, or disproving that. And I claim somebody said that. Whether they did or not, you can't prove that, right? So, but what I'm going to do is, once I call ICE, I'm going to have them clear all of you guys out. And you're going to be guilty until proven innocent. So then, I mean, do you carry your papers around with you? I don't even know, what is that, like, my birth certificate? Where the hell is my birth certificate? I don't know. Do you know?
I think one of the more important things to take away from this story is, while Republicans like to pretend like they're tough guys, in reality, they're gigantic pussies, right?
Wow.
Because here's what a strong person does not do. See a protester or a protest and then get so like up in arms about it that you have to call federal officials to deal with it, right? That's what a pussy does, right? You can't handle people protesting. You're that much of a weak man that you can't handle people practicing their constitutional rights and protesting legislation that you might have supported. You can't handle that? It hurts your feelings that bad? You're a pussy.
And it's an un-American move. When the Tea Party does protests, they're like, oh, that's good American citizens. Oh, yeah, I love that, right? When people they don't agree with do protests, like, oh my God, call the officials, call the feds, call ICE. So which one is it? Look, by the way, we're consistent. Tea Party, have at it, Hoss. Of course you can do protests. If somebody in the Tea Party decided they were going to sit for the national anthem because they were upset at what happened to the Bundys, okay, that's your right. You're an American. You want to go do a protest, that's God bless. Just don't bring weapons and point it at cops, which is what the guys at the Bundy Ranch did, and they did it in Oregon. See, could you imagine if these protesters in Texas
showed up with
brought
guns.
Weapons
right.
and pointed it at the officials? How quickly would they have been imprisoned, right? They're like, no, we're just gonna take over this federal government building for a couple of months. It's not how it would have worked, and you know.
Yeah. All right, one final story for you guys. Comedian Kathy Griffin did something that, of course, she got a lot of heat for because it involved violent imagery and it also involved a decapitated head of our president. So, oh God, that sounded really dirty. I said of our president. I think it's the first time I've said that. Anyway.
Yeah. Wow. A lot of parts of the story are unfortunate, yeah. But you're right. The minute you said our president, I was like, ugh.
Right.
To be fair, I also said that about the decapitated head.
Right, exactly.
Idea.
So here is the photo shoot that Kathy Griffin did. It is a head resembling Donald Trump, and it's bloody and looks terrible. The photographer behind it, Tyler Shields, is defending it, even though a lot of people, Democrats and liberals included, don't like it. Shields says, some people look at it and they love it. Some people look at it and they hate it. I understand there are going to be people that hate this. It's a very touchy subject, but this is not real. We didn't kill anybody, nor do I feel anybody should be killed. It's no different from a movie. It just happens to be a still image. I hate the image. I hate Trump, but I still hate the image. I think that we've become so uncivil as a society, and we've become everyone, like everything's become so toxic. And we just need to reel it back in a little bit and just calm down with like the violent rhetoric, the violent imagery, you know, inciting people. It's just not a good idea.
No, I'm disgusted by it. And it's a super obvious ploy to get attention. And it's super cheap. Come on, Kathy Griffin. I know you're desperate for attention, and like your whole career is based on that. But don't do this. This is gross. Yeah. And for the artist, it's not much of an art. That's not a statement. And we've covered a lot of anti-Trump art, which we appreciate, which I think is really clever. Like when they put the emoluments clause of the Constitution on the Trump Hotel in DC. Right, and but they did it. They did it through lights so that it's not permanent.
Right,
really clever. Got a lot of attention. Is a smart point to make. A decapitated head doesn't mean anything. What does that mean? What are you trying? No, take it off. I hate it so much. I can't stand it. Right. So now, look. Whenever I look at stuff like this, I always think, what if the shoe was on the other foot? Mm-hmm. If some right-wing asshole had a decapitated head of Obama that they held up, oh my God, how repulsive would that be? And so in this case, it's equally repulsive. Don't do that. It makes you look like the bad guys. And if you think that that's fun or clever, you are. That's not what how we should be protesting the president. It's really gross. And I just the other thing that gets under my skin is it's like a look at me, daddy, look at me. Everybody now is forced to talk about me because I'm such an asshole.
Yeah, it's just a bad idea all around. But look, to be fair to those on the left, a lot of people criticized her for doing this. It's not just us. Alyssa Milano was another person who was pretty aggressive in tweeting about it and showing that she disagreed with this image. She's like, I'm sorry, but that's totally inappropriate and so very offensive. And I have to believe you're smart enough to know better. So. No.
And I'm not convinced that she's smart enough to know better.
Yeah, and for her part, after Kathy Griffin tweeted that image, she followed it up with another tweet saying that she would never condone or support violence. But still, I mean that's a violent image, and you're right. I mean, if you want to make a political statement, that's not the most effective way to go about it.
Just every time, guys, think about what if the shoe was on the other foot. Imagine if they did that to Hillary Clinton's head. Oh, come on.
I mean, it's disgusting, but I, yeah.
No, it's gross. It's absolutely gross. And it makes you look like you're the bad guys again, because I think in this case you are. And you lose the moral high ground. Man, you have to work really hard to lose the moral high ground to Donald Trump. But they did it.
Yeah.
Okay, guys, we're out of time for real this time. Okay, we do have the post game for the members. How did the debate at Oxford go? It was about money and politics. And Elizabeth Warren was in the studio. How did that go? So tytnetwork.com/join to get the post game and become a member.
Bye-bye.